morning, folks. It's time for Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show about political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Join us for a stimulating, thought-provoking discussion. You'll get the facts as we focus on the real challenges facing Arizonans. Good morning, folks. Steve Williamson here. We're going to be talking about Obama's 8 years in office, and each one of us has selected 2 years to talk about, and I'm sure we'll stick just to those 2 years.
Oh, I'm sure.
I think we'll have absolute discipline here. But first, we want to talk a little bit about the news, because this has been a big news week. But sitting across from me is...
You know, Mike Cosentino, you know, when they say on NPR, when even NPR gets really excited about... There's been so much news this week. Where do we begin? You can tell it's been a big news week.
It's been a big news week, right, Klaus?
Absolutely.
And a crazy news week. And Gary?
It's going to stay crazy for a
while. Good morning, everyone.
All right. So what happened is there's a series of dossiers that nobody knew who wrote them that have been out there. And the American intelligence agencies and the FBIs boiled them down to a two-page addendum and put them on the report. And so the question has always been, why did they do this if we don't even know whether the stuff about Trump, golden showers in Moscow, or whatever it is true? And I guess if you're in intelligence, you tend to be a very suspicious person to start with because that's your job. And so about a suspicious guy saw these reports. They couldn't take a chance that they might be true, because if they're true, then the Russians could blackmail Donald Trump when he gets in office.
Right.
Right. I mean, that's the bottom line. Russians specialized since, way back in the KGB days in basically blackmailing people for economically powerful people and politically powerful people. I guess the old term was an agent of influence. You're not trying to get secret information from some guy. You're trying to cultivate somebody in a foreign country so that they'll do in the end what you want to do, which of course sounds like Donald Trump. But anyway, they have the dossiers. There's no way that we've been able to check them. First place, they all take place in conversations taking place in Russia. And so it's very hard to check them. It's not like the normal fact checkers and stuff can go on sources here and find out whether they're true or not. I think one reason that the intelligence agencies passed them along and now they've been leaked is that they were done by a man named Michael Steele, who ran the Russian desk for a while at MI5, the British Secret Service. He ran the Russian desk. Now, the running the Russian desk in the State Department or intelligence agency means you manage the information intelligence coming in from a particular country, and that's what he did. And he resigned. The report is from him, so it's not from some guy off the street that he would have a lot of contacts in Russia would seem very, very reasonable. But we're in a situation where if the stuff is true, then Donald Trump is deeply compromised by the Russians before he ever gets in office. They did help elect him, and they've invested, I think, a lot of time and money in it. There are other reports besides the few that we've seen from these series of dossiers from other intelligence agencies that he was compromised going back to the 1980s. Yeah. What does this mean? Well, one thing that getting all the stuff out in public does is it cuts into the chance that they can blackmail him once he's in office, because everybody's heard it and the scandal is sort of out of there. But what a week of news. And what we wanted to do, though, is in the whole push and shove of the news day, is take a look back at the Obama administration, at its achievements, its failures. And we do it a little bit chronologically. We're going to start off with Klaus. We're talking about the first 2 years. The first 2 years, how would you characterize? Those were the time of achievement.
Those were jubilant years. I mean, Obama was swept into office with the dream for every president, majority in both parties, both majority for his party in both houses. So for the next 2 years, he was able to pass a lot of legislation without being waylaid by Republicans, as happened in the next 6 years. There were a whole bunch of laws passed. The one that everybody remembers, of course, is the Affordable Care Act, or Obamacare, as his detractors used to call it, and then his fans called it as well. It brought health insurance to 20 million Americans who had been unable to get it before, established health exchanges in states on the federal level, but it did a few other things. It also vastly expanded Medicaid program that brought subsidized health insurance to millions of poor Americans who couldn't until then afford health insurance. They would go, when they were terribly sick, they'd go to the emergency room in a hospital, and the hospital had to ended up writing those bad debts off because those people
couldn't have a plan. And Klaus, didn't it also provide a whole lot of experimental programs and stuff that should lower medical costs in the long run?
Right. So now we get of course the Republicans now giggling gleefully as they go to repeal the Affordable Care Act. But they may stumble over a bunch of changes that may turn out to be permanent, because the public's perception, and this I think will be the lasting part of the ACA, the public's perception of government's role in medicine has changed. People now expect the government to make sure that a number of things happen, and they are the prohibition of penalizing people for pre-existing conditions.
Big deal.
Very big deal. Fear that you can't get health insurance if you change jobs and you're not stuck in a job just because you need the health insurance. A prohibition on lifetime or annual caps, another scary thing. What if you get so sick that it costs a lot of money, you'll be ruined, not under the Affordable Care Act. And then health insurance premiums that, you know, as you said, are affordable. So it's going to be very hard for Republicans to deliver those three aspects by recreating an equal or, as they claim, more favorable situation. This is a very complex system of laws and regulations that's been in place now. Now, the second major part of legislation in the first 2 years that most people have forgot about but was hugely important was the economic stimulus program. Probably many of us have now forgot how close we came from having a nasty recession turn into another Great Depression. But remember, unemployment stood at 10% and looked like it was going higher, and people were losing jobs, and the economy had, for all extents and purposes, ground to a halt. We were lucky this time around because the Federal Reserve Chair Ben Bernanke had written his dissertation on the Great Recession, and with the Fed pouring money into the economy and Obama's economic team enacting a stimulus program that included a big public works program and also, and this became controversial, a bailout of financial institutions and General Motors, but it stopped the downward spiral that had threatened the entire world. The bailouts, of course, turned out to be very unpopular because from a common man's perspective, why am I losing my job and getting kicked out of my home while financial companies that got us into this trouble in the first place are getting hundreds of billions of dollars? And that led to the Democratic defeat, led to the Democratic defeat 2 years later when Congress turned solidly Republican. There are a bunch of other laws were passed that I'll just touch on briefly. The Dodd-Frank Wall Street reform was the biggest financial reform bill since the Great Depression. The Volcker Rule limited the trading activities of banks that still echoes through the financial canyons today. On human rights, and this was groundbreaking at the time, benefits were extended to same-sex partners of federal employees, increased federal he was a champion of people with disabilities, increased federal employment of individuals with disabilities, signing the UN Convention of the Rights of People with Disabilities, and then appointment of the first Latina to the Supreme Court, first black attorney general. And then very importantly, he recommitted the U.S. to a policy of no torture and full compliance with the Geneva Convention. The DOD was ordered to film all interrogations, and that's something that may well fall by the wayside. Fuel economy standards were raised. He spent $60 billion in tax incentives and grants to push renewable energy. That's something else that may go by the wayside. And the required electric utilities produce 20% of the electricity from renewable energy sources by 2020. In science, he removed the restrictions and provided support for embryonic stem cell research. You may remember that was a no. That was a terrible thing under Bush. And in order to pay for the Affordable Care Act, taxes were raised for the highest earners from 35 to almost 40%, and capital gains went from 15 to 20%. And then 2.3% excise tax on manufacturers of medical devices. Those are really there are lots of other things took place, but those are the major accomplishments in the first 2 years. And as Steve pointed out, the world's opinion of the U.S. sharply improved in those 2 years. From while people couldn't understand, or thought people abroad thought that Bush was a silly, if not ridiculous, figure. Of course, Barack Obama, in their view, was the exact opposite. The first black president, highly intellectual. The rest of the world loved and admired him. The other accomplishment in the first 2 years maybe should not be forgotten. He got a start as a puppy.
Well, there you go.
What? I think you think the most important thing was the Affordable Care Act, because what is it, four or five presidents,
huge,
Mike Gary, you know, tried to get expand medical insurance for more people, and none of them were able to get it through Congress.
Right. Well, it began with FDR trying to, he had a second Bill of Rights, and trying to get health care as a as considered to be a right of the in the Constitution. And I think virtually every president, Democratic president since then,
let me say this, they have free health care in Mexico. You know, Mexico gets vilified here almost all in the United States. They understand the importance of health care to its people. Here, prior to the ACA, 45,000 Americans died, one every 12 minutes, for lack of health care. People die all the time of horrible things, but they died for lack of health care. You didn't see this on NBC and CBS.
You really didn't, did you?
We had 700 Arizonans die a year. Now, Arizona's a small state, because of lack of health care. Now, there was the cause of death could be traced to lack of health care. So the reasons for doing the ACA, the reason for Obamacare, was huge.
I think most of us, I know Mike and I know somebody whose life was saved by Affordable Care Act. One of the guys I worked with, extremely conservative guy, but when he got colon cancer, he at least was able to get insurance, and he could get it even with a pre-existing condition. It also, you know, in Europe and most of the industrialized world, nobody goes bankrupt over medical bills.
$600,000 a year. Yeah.
And it just doesn't happen.
The rest of the world just has not been able to even comprehend that there would be a fight over providing adequate medical care for all citizens.
Michael Moore did Sicko, wonderful movie.
They couldn't believe that the government was put to a halt over the proposal that every American should have health insurance.
But wouldn't you guys think that a lot of the discrediting or the criticism of the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, they call it now, was the fact that it was such a messy project to put it together.
Well, the Republican project?
It took months and arguments, and they had to sort of, we had blue dogs in those days who held out, and they barely passed it by one or two votes.
They took the Republican health plan in Massachusetts and applied it. I mean, this is what they did. This is a Republican plan. The Republicans should not have resisted. Yes, there was the Democrats, the anti-abortion Democrats, a small coalition that resisted for a long time because they couldn't get it written in. So you got all these bishops and the 59,000 nuns that went on the microphone and said, we need health care more than we need to worry about abortion. This is when the American nuns separated from the American priests. This was a coup d'etat.
But you couldn't use federal funds for abortions anyway. Gary's got an announcement.
Actually, you have the...
Oh, I have the announcement. Well, go on talking while I come up with the announcement. We have a new, what we call him, a sponsor. Democratic Perspective is supported in part by El Portal, a pet-friendly luxury inn that wishes to encourage discussion and debate of many points of view. And that's one reason why I think they're supporting us. El Portal is ranked among the 50 best small hotels in the United States by Condé Nast. It's located in the heart of Sedona near Tlacopaque. It offers one of the best breakfasts in Sedona every day from 7:30 to 10 o'clock, and you'll often find us there having breakfast at the big table.
It's nice to have a friend of the show.
Yes,
The burrito, the breakfast burrito with mole sauce is absolutely to die for.
And you can see Condé Nast in a plastic surgeon's office of higher than $500,000 a year income.
Okay.
We're discussing the accomplishments of President Obama on, I think appropriately, on Martin Luther King Day.
On Martin Luther King Day.
So the first
Happy
black
Martin
president.
Luther King Day.
And one of the big battles is a big battle between John Lewis and Donald Trump. And it's taking place right before Martin Luther King Day, that this fight would be going on now. And let's go ahead and do it. Let me ask what you guys think. John Lewis said, now look, there's no argument that Trump is the legal president of the United States, but is he the legitimate president of the United States, given the fact he had all this help from the Russians, he ran the scurrilous campaign, he had some help from the FBI, is he...
The voter suppression, can we talk about Republican voter suppression?
All right.
Now raised to a fine art?
Yeah. What do you think?
50 Gary? Members of the Electoral College that were unqualified, illegal members of the Electoral College. 50 members. The Electoral College was supposed to protect us from demagogues and people
right.
like
so,
that.
So what happened was really that John Lewis questioned his legitimacy, not his legality as legally erected as Gary's talking about, but about his legitimacy. Is he a legitimate president if a foreign intelligence service helped elect him to president of the United States?
Well, it depends what side of the aisle, you know, where you sit. If you sit on our side, no, we don't consider him legitimate. I mean, we got almost 3 million more votes than the Republicans. If you sit on the other side of the aisle, you say, well, that's just the way it is.
I would only point out the difference in response. In 2000, when the election was stolen, and I use that word carefully, but it was stolen, the Democrats backed away for the good of the country and let it go forward. In 2016, the election was again stolen. What do you think would happen if the roles were reversed? We'd be in a shooting war.
We would be.
Quite likely.
But we're going ahead, you know, for the good of the country.
I've got 2011 and 2012, and as Klaus hinted, there was a Democratic majority in both houses. Almost all the really positive legislation takes place in those 2 years. I've got the 2 years after the Republicans sweep into power, or at least they sweep into the House, if not the Senate. And once they control the House, they control the purse strings. And then we have a whole series of unprecedented battles where they're willing to crash the credit of the United States in order to get their way when they don't have enough votes.
Don't lose your thread, but let me ask you this. During that time, did Americans understand what they did when they put Republicans in charge of both of the House of Representatives?
I think President Obama said his biggest fault in his own eyes is not being able to explain his plans.
Well,
he said he ran good campaigns,
amen,
but he didn't explain his plan. One of the reasons is that what I call the memes, that the assumptions are so conservative. We've been inundated by right-wing media for generations and right-wing think tanks and so forth and so on. And so you couldn't be frank. It's like the stimulus plan that Klaus was talking about. He never said, look, the national government is not like your household. When business collapses and can't come up with any money, the government has to step in. And he didn't say it's going to make the deficit and the debt greater, but that's how we get out of this. I mean, he never really confronted directly the things that we've got to cut spending, we've got to do this, we've got to do that. He never confronted directly the assumptions that he had to assume. So people really didn't understand what he was doing. They said, oh, he's spending a whole bunch of money when, you know, and when we're really in debt.
Gary? I'd like to point out, though, that he's, you know, he accepts the criticism that he hasn't sold his, you know, he didn't sell his programs as well as he should have. But I'd like to point out that, for example, if you take the Affordable Care Act, he gave at least two major speeches each year. As I was going through his speeches through his eight-year term, he gave at least two speeches on the Affordable Care Act every year, in addition to covering it in the State of the Union address.
Yeah. You can go on Wiki.
A lot of it is that the media simply didn't cover it.
I agree.
That's right.
And you go on Wiki, and you can see a thousand different things he's doing every year. And they're mostly formal things. And as Gary said, he gave speech after speech, explanation after explanation. He visited this place and that place all over the country. The press, and I think Gary's right again, the press didn't ever frame the story correct. The story correctly was Americans don't have good health insurance the way the rest of the industrialized, the way the rest of the developed world has. They don't have it, and they need it. People are dying of it. They never framed it. It was always, about how nasty the process of getting it was through.
Government takeover.
And they never really framed it correctly. And I think that's one problem he had. But he didn't confront that. Now, that would have been hard to confront. In other words, you have to say things. If you say, look, When the economy crashes, we've got to spend more money to get out of this. If we don't, we're going to head for a depression that Klaus was talking about. He kind of edged around it because it was against all the assumptions that a lot of people have. And I think that is one flaw in the Obama administration. He didn't take on these questionable.
How much of that, though, do you think is the fear of being the angry black man? Kind of the Jackie Robinson syndrome of having to take some things.
No, I don't think that's it. I mean, there's a quote from him that I found as I did the research for my section. So he said, "We probably spent much more time trying to get the policy right than trying to get the politics right. There was probably a perverse pride in my administration, and I take responsibility for this, that we're going to do the right thing, even if it was unpopular."
Right. And he didn't get out for many of the things he did, for Affordable Care Act, for the stimulus. He didn't make the case well in public, articulate it, and that's what he's talking about. So by 2011, he's got a Republican House who's bent on absolutist confrontation. They confronted him first on the Affordable Care Act. They spent months trying to get Republicans to sign on the bill, and in the end, they wouldn't do it, even though it was designed as a Republican structured platform. So 2011, 2012, well, one of the things that happened 2011 is Osama bin Laden is killed. He makes a very brave decision. I mean, those of us who are older saw what happened to Jimmy Carter once the attempt to rescue the hostages went south. I mean, he didn't get reelected. So he put his presidency on the line, hoping that and believing that Osama bin Laden was there. He got no credit at all for it, which I think is a kind of an interesting process.
I think he got credit for about a week.
Yeah, and otherwise he's still always going to be weak on terrorism. But what President Obama, remember, he came into office trying to get us out of Afghanistan. It's now gone on 13 years, hasn't been successful doing it. Get us out of Iraq, cut the American casualties. Well, he must have cut American casualties by 95% over his presidency. So we're no longer losing very many people. But it was during these years that he had to begin to learn how to rely on his own actions and his own decisions and to just take the bad with the good. Because he did well enough and was popular enough to get reelected. I think, Gary, you're going to talk about that?
Yeah, it was overwhelmingly reelected. You know, Trump likes to talk about his landslide. It pales by comparison. It's actually,
there is no Trump landslide.
There was none. He was one of the smallest margins, even in the Electoral College, of any president in history. He won a reelection by a large margin. I'd like to pick up a couple of things in 2012 that I think were important. He announced that before the election he came out in support of same-sex marriage, and he was also had placed sanctions on Iran, and was dealing with if you remember, Hurricane Sandy came, I think, after the election that year, and then. Probably one of the biggest events of his entire terms in office was Sandy Hook, the murder of 26 people at an elementary school, and I think one of the things
20 children.
Yes, and one of the things that stood out to me after that was that and this he never made anything out of, never took credit for, but his aides talked about the effect on him. He went to the school and he had each of the parents of the children placed in a different classroom, and he went room by room by room to meet with the parents of the children who had been killed and tried to give comfort to them, and by the time it was over, this is 26 families. By the time it was over, he was just, wrung out, just exhausted. So I think, people tend to forget the humanity of this.
So he was a good man, Gary. So what?
No scandals.
Right. That's a good point. No scandals, right?
Yes. There are some manufactured scandals, like Benghazi and so on, but... in 2013, he did some things like signed into act the Taxpayer Relief Act. He was dealing and finally signed the sequestration, which was the battle over the budget with the Republican Congress. He was dealing with another horrible event was the Boston Marathon bombing. One of the more important things, he signed in an order on into law an order on climate change, or an executive order on climate change, kind of preparing for the Paris meetings. Then in 2014, he ran up against Vladimir Putin. And signed into law sanctions against Russia over Crimea. He sent more than 1,000 troops to Iraq to train Iraqi and Kurdish forces to fight ISIL. And probably the most important thing of 2014 was, I think, one of the most important things of his entire term in office was he announced a pact with China to fight global warming. I think that has been overlooked, and I think it's going to be eventually seen as one of the biggest.
Do you think he had a really positive effect, because the Paris conference on climate change was much more successful than I think anyone in the press anyway reported, and it turned out much more successful. Well, you think it's that he had a significant contribution to that, his style, the way he handled himself?
I think he and John Kerry led that entire effort, and I think that it wouldn't have happened without the U.S.
So if you had to sum up your 2 years that you're trying to cover for us, Gary, what would you call them if you had to come up with a headline?
Tragedy and progress on climate change. I think those would be the biggest thing. At some point, I'd like to come. We can come back to this, but I'd like to talk about the accomplishments of his partner, his wife, Michelle Obama, because I think she's been one of the most successful first ladies in history.
Well, the whole
greatest
family,
first lady ever.
The whole family was a class act. The man, the wife, the kids. I mean, if you wanted an example of what class is like, what grace is like, there they are, right there. And they've been there for 8 years.
Despite horrible things said about them and racist cartoons, our LD6 representatives in the Arizona House passed around some horrible racist emails and tweets about the Obamas. So, they basically were successful in ignoring that and remaining above it all.
I do think you made a good point, and I think I touched on it too, is that the Obama administration made American foreign policy understandable and respectable to the world. You could agree with it or disagree with it, but they professionalized it, and they got a lot of respect around the world for the way they handled themselves in the United Nations and in their ambassadorships and stuff. Well, last but not least,
he was wildly successful everywhere except here. He needed to spend more time on camera, more time. The United States had changed since Obama came up. Both politically and as a young man growing up in the United States system, and he failed to react to that change. They needed repetition. They needed to be told. They needed the guiding hand of a strong leader, not a coach on the side. Obama wasn't that personality-wise. He wasn't. Knowledge. I have all of this brilliant analysis. I can guide this country as no other person has, black or white.
No drama, Obama.
And yet, his popularity numbers inched up over the years, and was unable to drag, as other popular presidents have, the Senate and the House in his, and he
wasn't able to throw it back at them too.
Elections.
I mean, they would do all this really outrageous stuff, and maybe the press or Biden would say about trying to crash the credit of the United States in order to get their point. But Obama didn't go back to that. I think it would have been very hard for him to do it. Well, how about the last two years?
The last 2 years, you got Cuba, you got opening and normalizing relationships with Cuba, you got opening and normalizing relationships with Vietnam. These are two big deals, obviously, to anyone, an American, but certainly my generation, certainly the older you are, that because so long since 61, Castro took over and had the revolution in 59, Cuba was an ally off our shore 90 miles that we pretended wasn't there and was a big trading partner place the United States and its people spent a lot of time and money. But under Batista, it became a horrible dictatorship. And, of course, America was used to supporting dictatorships. Finally, all of these years later, 70 years later, we recognize this country that has been off our shore for. And that's going to be another legacy of Barack Obama.
How about domestic affairs, Mike?
Same thing with Vietnam. Domestic affairs, Gary talked about Sandy Hook. Gun control, they thought after Sandy Hook, this is going to be a slam dunk. The NRA has been eviscerated by a man, a conservative man, walking in and shooting 20 children and killing six employees. This is going to be, we are finally going to have an assault weapons ban. We are finally going to have those large magazines controlled, and we got neither. So Obama had a meeting with the very people Gary talked about in the White House with the key senators, Democratic senators, and said, the best we're going to be able to get. And this is when they started talking about coming after your guns. You guys, all those Jeep drivers in Sedona, Obama was coming after your guns. All they were going to do was expand back. He says, all we have a realistic chance of passing his expanded background.
But facts don't matter to them, which Mike.
People
are really
saying,
look,
the parents that Gary just talked about were in shock. You're the president of the United States, and all you can give us is expanded background checks.
Well, we have truthers now that claim that Sandy Hook was never happened. It was a fake event created by Obama to take away your guns.
Is American democracy in danger?
Yes. And that's what he explained.
Mike?
He explained this.
Well, it's certainly scary,
is it
right?
In danger, American democracy, by the election of Trump and by the fake news and conspiracy theories?
Let me get this straight, guys. At 10 to 9 on whatever day this is. This is not. We have no democracy. This is a fascist country. We are a fascist. We have some democratic institutions that remain. And I'm not. This isn't me. I go to the internet this morning and find out how many people are calling the pundits, American and foreign, that we are. This is no. Forget neo-fascism. They were talking neo-fascism.
Mike, you're getting carried away. I mean, I know what fascism was because I grew up right in the aftermath
and
of it.
And I can match. I know what fascism was, so close, and I'll match you statement for statement. Because we're not hauling Gary and me and him off to concentration camps yet, we have the mechanism in our government to do it. We didn't used to have it. We have this Patriot Act where they will take all of the thinkers, and your neighbors will rat you out in a heartbeat, like they did in Nazi Germany.
I've said this before on the air, that if you look up what Benito Mussolini, who created fascism, the entire philosophy of fascism, if you look up what he said about it, he defined fascism as more properly should be labeled as corporatism.
Corporatism, yeah.
We have been a fascist country for 30, 40, 50 years.
Exactly. If by the way, Mussolini did not invent the marriage of business and government.
No, that's deep into American history. Once we industrialized.
He invented modern fascism, in other words, a modern connection between business and government.
Let's let Klaus.
I think fascism has come to mean something quite different from what Gary explained. I mean, to us, fascism, really describes what went on in Germany during the Hitler period, right? And I think
The definition is getting expanded too wide.
Yeah, it means something else to people. When people, when somebody says fascism, the second thought is Hitler. And while I agree that American democracy is not anywhere near as perfect as we like the rest of the world to believe, it is far from the kind of fascism that we saw in Germany. And I don't think we'll see it. I mean, there's some stuff happening that's scary and upsetting, but I don't think we'll ever get to any of these extremes.
Were government employees allowed to speak out against the government in Nazi Germany?
Of course not.
Of course not. Well, the same thing's happening here. My American employees, federal employees, have been told that if they disagree with the government, they will lose their jobs.
Okay, nobody. Look, let's not get carried away. There are no concentration camps, right? We do have a free.
Yet.
No.
We have the mechanism, Klaus. We have.
I don't think so, Mike.
I love this. Did you think of why? Because Trump's too nice a guy. He's not vindictive.
Because America
is not going to punish his enemies.
America is not Germany in the 30s or Italy, or it's not Turkey, and it's certainly not Russia with no tradition of democracy.
Exactly.
Like the Alien and Sedition Act is the first time we have a real challenge to American democracy, and that's what 17 something or other, 99. There in the McCarthy period, all these periods of repression, Mike, have been in the United States pretty short lived, and then American people have reasserted themselves once they get a look at what it means.
I don't think there's any fear of concentration camps, at least in the near term, but. But I will say that look at what the new Congress did in its very first act. What they tried to do was do away with the Independent Ethics Commission that oversees Congress.
Americana, Gary.
They've since passed several bills that give them more power to fire government employees They can reduce the salaries of government employees to a dollar, so they don't even have to fire them. And now they're taking aim at the government ethics office that has criticized Trump. So you're seeing in their. They're asking.
And he's not even in office yet.
And they're asking for the names of the NASA scientists who have been collecting data on climate change.
So he can fire them.
They're asking for names of other employees in the EPA.
So he can fire them.
Right. So this is really troubling, and that is getting into what Klaus would define as fascism.
Well,
as far as
the other thing it's troubling, but it hasn't played out yet. There's lots of legal things trying to reduce. Suppose he reduces thousands and thousands of federal employees' salaries to $1. I don't think it's going to go over. I don't think the courts, even a right-wing court, would support a lot of this stuff. It has not really played out. You haven't seen the pushback
He's
from the American people.
Yet.
It depends on what the media does because, you know, to show how little people know, citizens who vote know, there is like 60% of the voting Republicans did not know the difference between Obamacare and the Affordable Care Act.
I love that one.
There's like 60% of Republicans still believe that Obama was born in Kenya and was never, qualified to be the U.S. president. These, because of the media bubbles that we all reside in, especially the conservatives, they take their information from people that are just flat out lying to them.
Well, we have a spirited conversation, which I don't think is going to end anytime soon.
I think we all
agree something really, really negative is happening. We have announcements.
With the time we have left, we're going to finish 2015 and 16 that we have Flint, Michigan that happened during that time. We have Free College, which was a big deal. He offered and certainly suggested free college during his last year, during 2016. How far it got and the executive order, we'll see how far if it grows legs as time goes on. And that's one of those things that you keep talking about, that the American population might be able to, through phone calls, through marching on Washington, that is the only thing between fascism. The only thing, we are a fascist nation now, in my opinion, just because we have still, so far, the ability to gather, although they are severely limiting that. The women that are going to be in marching in Washington this week have been told many times they can't go near the Lincoln Memorial. They've been told where they can go. So there are more restrictions on Americans.
We have an announcement, protesting. Actually, Mike, of a march, right,
yeah,
Gary?
Yeah, it's not just in Washington where women are marching. I
understand that, but that's where it makes the biggest impact. They have it in Jerome. You going to announce
they're
it?
They're going to be all over the country. There's one in Sedona, Saturday, January 21st, from 1 to 3 p.m., and it's a women's. It's in a sister march for the Women's March on Washington against Das Gruppenführer.
And men are invited to the march. Door yearly meeting is the next Sunday evening, right?
The annual meeting for Door is Democrats of Red Rocks is Sunday at 5 p.m., Sunday, January 22nd, at St. Andrew's Episcopal Church in West Sedona.
And Mike, who do we have?
There's breakfast on Thursday. There's a Door breakfast on Thursday.
Ah,
isn't there?
Good. Is it the third Thursday? It should be.
Yeah, it is.
Who do we have on next week, Mike?
We have a Tim Walensky, Cottonwood's brand new mayor, been on the council for 10 years. He's he restores homes and things by trade. He's kind of a nice young man. I think you'll like him. Cottonwood has a lot to look forward to. Tim Walensky next week. You can catch this broadcast and all our broadcasts on bbid.org.
You've been listening to Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show focusing on the political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Catch us every Monday morning after the 8 o'clock news, right here on AM 780 KAZM. It's beautiful out there, folks. Have a great day.